Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen uns den Regen auf mein Kopf. Hink wie ein Deckelbus ist die kleine Fahre dem Top. Geht mir kein Sach mit. Die Tropfen.
Welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold, and we have a very special episode of Kill Me Now this week and a very special episode next week, part one and part two, with my friend Leslie Wolfowitz's mother, Sally Frischberg, who survived the Holocaust. And her story is so, there's no words to describe her story, but it is moving. It's a story that needs to be told. And with all that's going on in the world, I wanted to shed some light on the horrors of our past and so that we don't repeat them. So I hope you enjoy part one. It is riveting. And, you know, sit back or don't sit. Run on your treadmill. Ride your bike. Do whatever you're doing. And I hope you enjoy this as much as I enjoyed spending time with Sally Frischberg. We're here with Sally, and we're here with my friend Leslie.
Hi.
Whatever. But we're more interested in Sally. Sally Frischberg.
Yes.
This is my Jew bell, Sally. Yes. And every time I mention something Jewish on my podcast, I ring a bell. Because I want people to know how much we have contributed to the world as Jews. And I know that this podcast, this episode will be this. So I'm just ringing it a few times in the beginning so I don't interrupt you. That's it, people. Don't yell at me about that I don't have the bell on. But Sally, this is a very special episode of my podcast because I have been wanting to interview you. You can ask your daughter, Leslie, since I met her.
It's true.
Leslie took I teach a class in writing, and I made her write about the Holocaust, and it was brilliant.
She is a very good writer. She's excellent.
That's I know
very
she nice. Is.
Right.
She's I very- still have an essay she wrote years ago about her clogs that I threw out.
Oh, I kept your clogs?
Clogs. My clogs. Mother didn't like my clogs and she threw them out.
I don't find, you know.
I wrote it to
not
shame
attractive,
her.
The clogs. They're not. And why everyone, like, are they that comfortable? How old were you?
But her clogs had such a nice personality, and I threw those clogs.
I know. It's good to humanize shoes, you know. Sally, we live in this world. It's 2022, and I believe anti-Semitism is on the rise. I mean, I don't think it ever went away, right?
You're right. It didn't. And it comes with the times. The worse the times, the more anti-Semitism. The world seems to need someone to blame for its trouble. And the world wants to get even with all this trouble.
Right.
And the party to blame is a good party to get even with by punching away. And we suffer the punches.
Why do you think, I mean, it's been since the beginning of time.
Well, since the beginning, actually, we have a very good idea historically of the length of its development. And the problem began when the Jewish community had a difference of opinion. Is there one God or more?
Right.
And that difference of opinion has lived through the ages.
Right.
And has been an excuse for everything.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about, is there one God or more? It's a question. And that is our religion. Our religion is a thinking person's questioning religion. And I feel like that part of us, that curiosity, makes us so special in a way, and yet we're vilified for it. And yet that curiosity and the way we think has helped make the world so much better on
yes,
so many
absolutely.
Levels. Nobel prizes. You know, if we talk about modern day stuff, we have heart transplants, we have GPS, cell phone technology.
Yes.
Medical, scientific, you know, the
and
arts.
We have a consistent belief that human beings should care for each other. That is consistent in
right.
our teaching. And I don't see that our teaching has ever asked about which human being should be what.
Right.
No. We are human beings, and we must take care of each other. If we don't, we're going to go under
right.
because we have the means. We can now destroy ourselves. Absolutely. I don't know what happens after this.
Right.
But we can destroy
and
ourselves.
It's sad. It's a sad.
Actually, if you think about it, you're panic stricken.
Right.
But that is the case, and we might as well get used to it. And if we accept that, maybe we will be wiser and maybe we will care for each other.
Right.
Maybe.
I mean, but at what point? I mean, like, how bad does it have to get until we?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Look at the today,
yeah.
Today, the people in, you know, under Hitler number two, I
right.
call him.
Right.
What happened? We were supposed to never again allow such
right.
things. And it's allowed and it's going on and there's very little being done.
You know, I love that you said that because as a kid, I said to, you know, I asked, my father served in World War II, an American. You know, you grow up and in Hebrew school, it's like, it's in Hebrew school, it's like, we learn about the Holocaust very young.
Yes.
And you question it as a child. Like, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? And my mother, who lived in Manhattan, we didn't know a lot. We weren't told a lot. And then once they went over there and they saw and whatever. Okay. Here we are living in a world where we see it in real time. And we're still behaving the same way.
Yes, we are.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And it saddens me. And I lose sleep over it.
Oh, I bet.
Do. Yes, I bet. Do.
Sally, you survived the Holocaust.
Yes.
And I really want to be able to tell everyone your story. Would it be okay if we started from the beginning?
Start
at the very beginning. A very good place. That's a Holocaust movie.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Did you watch that movie growing up?
My mother took me to see it.
And Sound of Music,
yes. And it was her favorite movie. And
that's your favorite movie? I love that movie. Okay.
When I was a little girl and I was very terrified by the Nazis. You know, those scenes where they're hiding in the Abbey trying to escape the Nazis.
And then at the end, the Von Trapp family singers. The family Von Trapp. Okay. Yep. Sally, so you were born in Poland.
Yes.
Can you tell?
1934.
Oh, my God. You look fabulous.
That's a year after Hitler rose to power.
33, he rose to power.
Right. And
okay, your father's talking really loud. Can you close? I can hear it. Wait, we have to stop.
What is that?
It's your lovely husband on the phone.
Oh. He doesn't believe he's loud, but he's very loud.
I'm loud. But okay. I'm sorry, Sally. Okay. So thank you for letting me call you Sally, because my mother, if God rest her soul, how dare you call her Sally? That is Mrs. Frischberg to you. Okay. So you were born in Poland. What? In 1934, which was a year. So Hitler rose to power in 33.
Right. And I remember it very, very well. The Polish scene. I mean, I was a part of it. I like being there.
Right, in Poland.
Yes. And in spite of the fact that I was often insulted, I didn't know it was an insult. They would say to me, "Dirty Jew, go to Palestine." I didn't know where Palestine was. I didn't know why they were sending me there. I didn't, where you came from. I had no idea.
Right. So what town was this in Poland?
It was called Ujejowice. It was like all the other little towns.
What was it like
charming.
There?
Charming, as far as I was concerned, because I was happy.
And what kind
of- It had a population of 150 people.
No way.
Yeah.
And so you all knew each other. How many Jews versus and non-Jews?
Not very many Jews. I don't know the number. You right. might because
I read someplace there were 50 Jews
out of the 150.
Out of the 150.
So that's a
that's
third.
Substantial. Yeah. That's a substantial Jewish
and
population.
And you had a synagogue and
my grandfather, my mother's family had a very large room in which there were very many what were called bunk bettles. In other words, they were benches. You opened up the bench, you slept in there. But when you weren't sleeping, it was a bench.
Right.
And the people came there and they prayed. And I used to go with my father to that synagogue, to my mother's family, and I would play with my whoever would play with me. They were a very large family.
Right.
And I was sort of a little butter around the place.
Right.
You know, I pulled on everybody's legs. And I was very little still, so
right.
I remember.
Okay, I'm going to have to say you're still. I mean, I know I'm gigantic, but you're little. Okay. Yeah.
My mother has shrunk.
But she's
no
adorable.
Longer 5 feet tall.
Okay.
I'm less than 5 feet now. And it was all very, it was charming. It was loving. It was tolerating. In other words, everybody I'd come, I'd pull on their pants and they wouldn't. Nobody was ever unkind to me.
Right,
nobody.
Right.
I can't remember a soul that didn't allow me to do whatever I pleased.
Right. You were
a
child. Yeah.
Climb on them, I climbed up. And it was a very nice life as far as I was concerned.
Were you religious?
I didn't know what religious was. At this point in time, I can tell you that I'm not among the most religious people in my community.
Oh, well, we're in. By the way, I need to bring this 4,000 million times. We are in Midwood, right?
Yes.
Which is Jewy Jew. Yeah, I mean, yes, we're in Jewville.
Right.
Yeah.
It is Jewville.
Yeah.
But I am Jewish.
Right.
I don't deny my Jewishness.
Right.
But am I religious?
Observant.
Ooh, can we talk about that for a few hours?
Right, right. But
that's the other thing, that my mother raised me in this household where a lot of survivors surrounded my grandparents, my great uncles, stuff, and my aunts and uncles, stuff like that. But like the connection to God was always like, does God really exist?
Well, I can see questioning that. I mean,
100%.
Who better to question that?
Right, 100%.
So,
and of course, once you question if God exists,
right,
you come to the conclusion, yes. And the question that follows, why doesn't he do something?
Right.
What kind of a God is this? To let what happens happen and do nothing? When does this God intervene and do something? So you get into a whole mess. I don't go there. I say, I am what I am. I'm Jewish. Believe me, I'm Jewish.
Right.
Ask anyone you want.
Right.
I'm Jewish. That's enough for me.
Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV. And I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
How many kids in your family? What number are you?
I was number one. My father said when I was born, he thought it was the most wonderful thing in the world, the most wonderful day, the most wonderful date. Everything became Wonderland when I was born. And it was that way for us. We were a very close family. Until we were ripped apart.
And how, siblings?
I have two siblings still, but I lost two.
So there were five of you all together?
Yes.
Five kids.
All girls.
All girls.
All girls.
I bet your father was like, oh.
Must have wondered what will happen. Yeah. And what happened was not good.
And how far apart were all the siblings?
We were 2 years apart from each other consistently.
So 10?
The last two were twins.
Okay.
But the first three survived. We are still, all three of us are still alive. None of us are in good shape anymore.
Oh, please. You look fantastic. Oh,
thank you.
Amazing.
Sleepless, but amazing. Oh.
I don't think people sleep anymore. Anyway, I don't. Okay. So you're the eldest of five.
Right.
And you're having this idyllic childhood, essentially.
Loving.
And do you have Shabbat dinner? Do you, I mean...
Well, luxury was not a part of our lives.
Okay.
Because it was a poor world.
Right.
So we were living in a poor world, and we lived accordingly.
Okay.
But hunger was not a part
right.
of it. We were not hungry. We were not... The circumstances were not luxurious.
Right.
But I didn't know about...
But it doesn't matter. You don't know. You know,
no,
you don't. And you had love. And what did your father do for a living?
My father, I gave it a name. I call it, he was a middleman in the world of...
dairy products.
Dairy connections, for
okay.
example. Being a Jew, he owned no land and he owned nothing.
Right.
So what he did was he had cows. I don't know if he rented those cows or if he bought somehow. I don't know the arrangement. He had nowhere to put the cows because he had no accommodations for them. So the richest man in town who had a beautiful castle that I admired immensely.
Not Jewish?
No, not Jewish. What
do you remember his name?
Sure. Mr. Oh, darn it. It'll come back to me.
Okay,
it always comes back to me. But for the moment, I can't remember.
Okay.
And, of course, the age is the reason why I don't remember for the moment.
I don't remember either. But, he had this big castle.
He had this big castle, and he had all this place for everything. And my father rented space from him, like renting an apartment.
Right.
He rented for his cows.
Like office space.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the cows were there, and the cows were fed. Now, who paid for the feeding of the cows?
Right.
Had to be my father because he got the milk.
Right.
And what did he do with all this milk that he got? He took it to town. Now, the next town next to us was, there were two. On one side was Kanchuga, and on the other side was...
Pshevorsk?
Pshevorsk. Very good, Leslie.
Thank you. The smile on your face.
Pshevorsk. And my father used to go to these towns and arrange for the alteration of this milk into butter, cheese.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Buttermilk. My father used to drink buttermilk. Yeah.
Sour cream.
Yeah.
Whatever
cottage cheese.
Right. Whatever came from the milk they made. And my father sold it. and the income from.
How did he transfer? Did he have a cart? Like, what did he?
No, my father had these cans, big cans, and they were filled with milk, and they right. were taking on carts.
Yeah, know, yeah, carts. Yeah,
horse and.
Did he ride the horse and buggy? Or?
No, he didn't ride okay. them. He had people ride them.
And what do you know the name? Was there a name of the company?
Or, well, there was. You as know, far as I know.
They should have called it When the Cows Come Home. Oh, God, I am funny, people. Okay. So, and everything was fine. You said that you knew that people would say stuff to you, but did your parents warn you, you know, people don't like us or,
no,
you know?
No, my parents never warned me. I never asked my parents because I didn't care.
Right,
I
mean, you're a kid. Said, who was,
but didn't matter.
And you were happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely very, very happy. And I remember we used to break for, you know, picking and eating.
Right.
And I would go to my friends, my Catholic friends.
Right.
Everybody in Poland is Catholic.
Right.
And then there are a few Jews.
Right.
And these Jews would wind up in the homes of all my Catholic friends, where I'd have bread, you smeared butter on it, you put cheese on it, and you got a cup of milk, and
okay.
what could be better?
And you go to school, and it's a mixed school. How many kids are in your class when you were?
I never went to school.
You didn't go to school?
Never went to school. By the time I was old enough for school,
that's when
Germans said that okay. we were not allowed. No Jews allowed.
Yeah.
I arrived in school. My first day in school was an event. My mother had me all dolled up.
What was your? Can you tell to say the name of your parents?
Yes, Sylvia Gams Engelberg, married Leon Engelberg.
Right.
And this Sylvia dolled me up, prepared me for school, took me to school.
Right.
And I was sitting in class, and during the course of the lesson, the Nazification, had I been older, I would have known what he's doing.
Right.
But I had no idea what right. the hell he was doing. So the teacher, the Nazi teacher, was teaching. And
you were sitting at your desk?
I was sitting at my little table.
Oh, okay.
And I was given a paper, which I couldn't read. And when the day ended, I saw my mother waiting for me. And when I got to her, I don't know if she took my paper or she had her own paper that she was given also. I don't remember. But she said to me, she held the paper and she said, "You can't come back to school." And I was horrified. I mean, this was heaven on right. earth. And she said, "You're Jewish and they don't want Jewish children in school."
Now, at this point, are you wearing a star or
no.
you don't know anything that's going on? They've shielded no. you, but they knew.
And I knew too. Every Saturday afternoon, my parents had the entire big Jewish community in their house. And every Saturday afternoon, they talked all afternoon. And they were talking always the same thing about him.
Right, and it was.
Him was Hitler. And what will he do? Where will he go? What are his intentions? What does he mean?
Right.
Oh, I was sick of the subject. But I listened because what else was I going to
right.
do? And
so somewhere inside you said, this is the him thing.
I began to wonder what this is all about.
And you're how old? Six?
Yes, exactly six. Yes. And now I realize that him has decided that I can't go to school because I'm Jewish.
Right.
And I was very upset at that. That really made
me. Well, of course.
All day long. What was I going to do?
Right.
They were in school. Well,
right.
Nothing. So I was not happy. But I had a wonderful uncle, Naftali. Naftali was my father's youngest brother. And he had returned from the defeated Polish army. And he was back home, a runaway soldier. And he played with me. He taught me the alphabet. He taught me numbers.
Okay.
He brought me candy. Aww. He was a gem. And so
he gets murdered by the Nazis.
Thanks so much, Leslie, because I wanted that. I wanted to that to come out at this point.
Sorry. Okay, so just edit. I just think it's so sad.
I know.
It's horrific.
It is. And he taught you and helped you. And
yes. So whatever I learned, whatever I learned in Poland, I learned from my uncle Naftali. Because I wasn't in school at all.
What a great person.
They got me on the first day.
With that, I heard the chair move. She's got Spilkies, this one, getting up. Oh, we're getting
she
a picture
wants to
of
show
him.
You Naftali.
Let me see a picture of Uncle Naftali.
Yeah.
So this is my grandfather's side of the family.
Okay.
That's my mom.
Okay.
My Aunt Mimi.
Sally, Mimi.
My grandparents.
Her parents. Oh, they're so good looking.
No, that's right. My mother's parents.
Very.
My grandfather's parents. So
okay.
My mother's grandparents.
Okay. That's Uncle Naftali who taught you how to read. And he's handsome too.
Yes, he was.
Good looking family.
He was a handsome boy. And he would have married my beautiful Aunt Blima, my mother's youngest sister, had they lived. They were so in love.
Okay. So you are now forbidden to go to school. You're home all day. What's the next thing that happens?
The most important next thing that happens is that we are the hosts to three German offices because our town did not accommodate visitors.
Right, there's no hotels.
Nothing. So where did they stay? They stayed in the homes of friends and relatives. If anybody came, I don't know how many people came. And now there's an army there.
Now, these are German soldiers who don't like Jews.
Well, in every community, there are exceptions.
Right.
One of these three offices turns out to be a teacher from Munich. And he is now stationed in our town. And he spots my father's chess set. And he loves to play chess. And my father and he played chess more times than I can think of. I mean, they were always playing.
But your father was winning, right?
They were, I think, well matched.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm going to go for the joke.
And they were also, they were people who were serious about things. And they talked, and I was sleeping behind a wall that was put up so that I had
privacy.
but it was a thin wall, and I could hear every word. I couldn't understand what they were talking about.
Because they were speaking German.
But it was interesting. It was interesting.
Right.
They talked, and I listened, and I love history. And I think that's where the love of history was born, in those conversations, because they were discussing the way the human family is evolving and what's happening and why it's happening. And before, when you said to me, how did it happen? We crossed for a moment the question of the difference between Jew and non-Jew.
Right.
And they covered that. They talked about it. So happily, so contentedly, so trustingly. They weren't afraid of each other.
Right.
It was lovely. It was very, very
and
nice.
And he lived there with?
He lived in a house.
What was his name? Do you remember?
Sure. Mr. Arnold.
Mr. Arnold.
Arnold of Munich, whom my father tried very hard to find.
Oh, I bet.
But he didn't find him, nor a member of his family, nor a stone of his house. Because by the time we got to Munich after the war and my father went, nothing but stones. Munich was gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's Mr. Arnold and then two other guys.
The other two spent most of their time at headquarters.
Right.
Where was headquarters? It was in that lodge.
Oh, in the house where the cows were. Wow, in the palace.
That's right.
So that guy.
The owners ran away.
Oh, they did? They left?
Yes. Yes.
And they weren't Jewish.
No, they weren't Jewish.
But they wanted to get out before.
But I'm reminding you what Mr. Arnold used to say to Grandpa about the war.
That's very important because it may have been the cause of my survival. Mr. Arnold kept saying to my father that this war is not like every other war. This is a different kind of war. He said the people who get killed first now are not the soldiers on the battlefield. They are the most innocent, the weakest, the least able to defend themselves. You must find a way to defend your family, he said. Find a way, otherwise you won't live.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he persisted. He didn't give up. He would check on my father. Did you find anything?
Wow.
And it was consistent.
Right.
And Mr. Arnold was with us from his arrival in 39 till Hitler declared war on his friend Stalin, whom he no longer needed.
Right.
So he goes to war, and poor Mr. Arnold has to go and fight. So we lose our friend, Mr. Arnold. And by the way, the great means of communication was Yiddish, because you know that Yiddish is built on German.
German, yeah.
The two men understood each other.
So Mr. Arnold spoke Yiddish.
No, he spoke German.
Oh, he spoke German, so they... Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yiddish? He spoke German. My father spoke Yiddish, but
they figured it out.
Right.
Hey, everyone. I have a new sponsor, and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is... skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin. And I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
Okay, so
I'll help you move the story along a little.
Okay.
Fast forward, they live like this in this small town for a number of years The Nazis. And then the Nazis say, report to the train station.
So you're at home and you get a notice? How do you get?
We get a placard on the church. The church wall is a big placard that says that all Jews, the handful that were there, must report to the railroad station, and it gives a date ahead of time. On such a date, at such time, to be resettled in the east of Poland, where everything will be better. Better homes, better jobs, better health care, better schools. Everything would be wonderful there.
And do people believe this?
We don't know what to say.
Right.
We don't know what to do. But my father does, though, because he knew Mr. Arnold.
Right.
And my father, Mr. Arnold said to him, don't believe the liars. The liars will tell you whatever they please. It has nothing to do with the truth. And my father said, we won't go. We won't be resettled. And people, my father was highly regarded in his little community.
Right.
And people came and said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Right, because he had those meetings every Saturday.
Whatever. Yeah. And my father said, I don't know what we should do, but I will tell you this. We, my family, is not going to resettle them.
Right.
And I think you shouldn't either. And they said, well, where are we going to go? My father said, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I am going. What happened at the end was that in our town, everyone wound up doing the same thing.
No one went to the train station?
Except my grandfather.
And why did your grandfather go?
Because my grandfather was, my father and my uncles called him a lazy man. See, he brought up these sons and he retired. He didn't go to work. He read. He loved to read. And I inherited that. I love to read. And he read about the German people and their excellence. And he admired them greatly. Mm-hmm. He wasn't one of them.
Right.
But
right.
He admired them greatly. And he said to my father, what kind of a crazy guy are you? Why don't you trust these good people who are always doing what's good for mankind. And he trusted, and they took him on the train. And the neighbors found out what they did because it wasn't too far away that they took him.
Where
they brought others from other communities. They lined them up. They gave them shovels, and they had them dig
Graves.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know it was graves.
They thought it was, just
they didn't know what, I don't know what they thought. And after they dug, they shot them into them. And after they shot them into them, they covered them up. And our neighbors told us that the soil above often in some spots moved for days. And I got it into my childish little head that my grandfather was buried alive. And for a little while, for a good early years, it was a bothersome dream.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, very bothersome. But as I, you could almost like do a graph, the more secure I became, the less dreaming I did.
Right.
And then I understood what was happening. You know, I was growing up. Right. I was learning.
So you don't show up at the train station.
Nobody shows up except my great-grandfather.
Except the great-grandfather. How? So before the train station thing, you must leave before the date of the train station.
The night before we leave.
Okay.
And everybody has a pack. I had a little pack to carry.
Do you remember what was in it?
No.
No.
I know I had a black little, my grandmother had given me a little coverlet, whatever, a black wool. And I loved it because my grandmother gave it to me. I know I had that.
Okay.
But what else?
And Leslie's clogs.
And my clogs. Yeah, my clogs.
Okay, so you remember that. And then you leave. And they say,
let's go. We didn't know where we're going.
So your parents say, let's go, pack up. You each get a bag.
Let's go.
So can I jump in for one sec? So my grandmother had siblings, had like 11 siblings. And they split up. So the whole family had a meeting.
She's now talking about
my other side, my maternal.
Okay.
Right. Well, my mother's mother.
Right.
So she was one of 12, and they decided to split up. So my mother's family, grandmother and grandfather, connected with my grandmother's older brother and his wife, because combined they had the only grandchildren.
Okay.
They had 7 little children. And it was felt that the children were going to be an impediment in surviving. So they decided they would all stay together in an effort to support each other, whatever, and not be a burden on the rest of the family. And the other siblings, some of whom were married, some of whom were single, went in different directions. So one was a group of your grandfather with his, one of the children, one of my mother's uncles was was special needs. So the father stayed with him because he knew someone had to take care of him. And one of the sisters who was single also stayed with him to help her father take care of. I mean, it was just like a lot of people trying their best to carve out a way to survive.
Right.
And then there were these 4 bachelor uncles who were all young men, really the age of our children. They were all like, the youngest was probably 18. Uncle Norman was probably about 18 at the time.
At this point, I am 10.
So he's 18?
No, wait a minute. I'm 8.
8. So he was 16. And his older brothers, he went with 4, with 3 other brothers who were all, if he's 16, one 18, one 20, one, you know, 22, whatever. And they went. And everybody dispersed because they felt that a commune, you know, a family with 17 people would never be able to survive.
Right.
Okay, so sorry. I just thought that was.
So there's you and your parents.
And uncle.
And my mother's oldest brother and his wife and his children.
He has 3
children. Because these 2 children. Families decided that we have the same problem, children. Let's stick together. So the 2 families decide to we're gonna wander off together, and we wandered.
How many of there were you all together?
7 children and 4 adults.
Okay, and you just start walking.
Where we went into the fields. The fields are all over the place.
Right.
And at this time of the year, late summer, This is now 1942.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Very good.
I've been paying attention, Mom.
Leslie, you're a good student. Yeah.
So where do we go? Into the fields. And when we get there, it's very, it's summer. It's
hot as hell.
No. It's very nice at night in the fields in the summer.
Okay.
And we make ourselves comfortable in the straw, in whatever is on the field. And the harvest has begun, and there's stuff all over the place.
So there's food.
Well, it's not food, but there's fruit.
Fruit.
So we collect fruit, and that's our diet. We're on a fruit diet.
Okay.
And
which probably these days
people would pay for that.
Yeah.
But we have to find a place to hide. So what do we use? The farmers have built
haystacks.
Stacks, right, but it's not hay. They build everything. Whatever they cut, they build into stacks. And we would approach these stacks and we would say, we'll take this, you take this, and we were neighbors. And we would, with our hands, we would dig holes because that gives. As you pull, it gives. Right. You make a hole, you get inside the hole. You pull back stuff to cover you up, and this becomes your house for a night.
And the farmers didn't find you.
Oh, I'm sure they knew what's happening. Right. They must have wondered, what happened to
What
happened to my stag?
You know?
But it was not an important issue because they just
swept it
together again. So. And nobody said anything because they didn't know what to say. We weren't there to tell them.
Right.
Because we changed every night. We had the wisdom to know.
Don't stay more than 24 hours or less than 24. Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Sally Frischberg. Oh, you're not going to even believe part two. So I know it's a week, and I'm sorry you have to wait the week, but it's, what a story. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast would not be possible without the help of Brittany Jo Sowards. I want to also thank my friend Leslie Wolfowitz for taking me over to her mom's house. I mean, I know you're feeling it too. I mean, you have to be feeling it because these stories are so important. Especially with what's going on in the world right now. And you're just going to freak when part two comes out. Now, let's talk about me, because I'm really important. And now I know a lot of people listen to the end because they're writing to me. This week's person who listens until the end is my friend and neighbor and husband, Ken Houck. Okay, Ken Houck, I love you. I'm mentioning all the people who listen to the end because I love you. If you live in the Los Angeles area, I will be performing for the Netflix Is a Joke Festival Friday, May 6th at 7 o'clock at the Elysian Theater. And Saturday, May 7th at the Greek Theater, where they will be doing recording a special of gay LGBTQ plus stand-ups. So that'll be really fun. Also, I am going to be performing with Jessica Kirsten on June 2nd. Yeah, baby! I think that's in Westport, Connecticut, but who the hell knows? It's in Connecticut somewhere. And, you know, just go to my... Listen, first of all, you should be a subscriber. You should have left a review of 5 stars, of 5 stars, of 5 stars. You should also be following me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Judy Gold, JudyGold. Check out my website, judygold.com, JudyGold. You know, that's it. I really love, I don't know who's listening right now. I mean, I know there are people who listen to the end. I can't believe it.
So I just have to tell you that I have some exciting things coming up that I'm going to be sharing with my fans or my fan. I don't know how many I have, if it's in the double digits. But I also know that I appreciate you so much. I can't believe what's going on in this country. Gay. Ron DeSantis is fucking out of his goddamn mind. I just can't believe it. So hopefully the weather will get nicer and warmer and the sun will be out and people will start acting normal. But I doubt it. I really highly fucking doubt it. So hug the ones you love, and the ones you don't love, don't hug, and just tell them to go fuck themselves, because that's, you know, all right, don't tell them to go fuck themselves. I'm just rambling now, just for my people who listen to the end, but I just want to say thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and I hope that you enjoyed part one of Sally as much as I enjoyed speaking with her. I'm so glad I can eat bread now, because I can't with the fucking matzah. And as we always say, so long.